You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool.
The last week of Confederate History Month 2013, at least the officially recognized Confederate History Month by many state governments here in the South. Still to this day, they are celebrated. But it is a history, a rich cultural heritage that should be celebrated and remembered each of the 365 days of the year. And certainly we do our part to highlight the official Confederate History Month, the remembrance, with our on-air tributes each April. And it's never far from our hearts, the rest of the calendar either. But Keith, you know, this year's series has been a hit, it seems, especially with, for whatever reason, our international audience. And I want to tell you something, folks. If you have enjoyed listening to our Confederate History Month series this year, you will love listening to the series we had in 2007. Now, I say 2007 because that was the last year we got started in 04. 2007 was the last year that we were still on the air five nights a week. The following year, we got picked up by the network and we moved to a once-a-week format. But in 2007, I'll tell you this, it was five nights a week all throughout the month of April, and it was Confederate history every night. And we had, it was exhaustive detail. It was a parade of Southern celebrities who found their way to our studio that month. And the good thing about Confederate history is it's the same now as it was then. It hasn't changed or rewritten itself since 2007. The media elites may try to rewrite it and continually denigrate it for us, but the truth doesn't age. And so what we presented to you in 2007 is just as pertinent as it is now. And I want to just give you a couple of guests that came on during that month. We had Dr. Thomas DeLorenzo, who is the author of Lincoln Unmasked. Of course, TPC regular Sam Dixon was on the show to talk about Shattering the Icon of Abraham Lincoln was the name of his book. Richard Flowers, this gentleman was the curator of Beauvoir, which is the Jefferson Davis Home and Presidential Library. So we had him on. As far as I'm concerned, that's better than having the curator of the White House on. Michael Andrew Grissom, we talked about his book. His book is being held in the hands of Keith Alexander here in the studio right now, Southern by the Grace of God. You actually heard him last month when we did the Bill Rowland Best Of tribute. Michael Andrew Grissom, Dr. Michael Hill, President of the League of the South. Clint Johnson, author of The Politically Incorrect Guide to the South. You can find that in any bookstore. Senator Glenn McConnell, he is a senator from the state of South Carolina. He was on with us to celebrate the South, no less, in April 2007, as was Dr. Thomas Naylor, a professor emeritus of economics at Duke University. He was on to talk about the merits of secession, and we also had Waite Rawls on, who is the president of the Museum of the Confederacy in Richmond, Virginia. Folks, that was just the tip of the iceberg. Jess Bonds, who was a co-host of the Political Cesspool at the time, did a live broadcast from Shiloh National Military Park here in Tennessee, where the Battle of Shiloh was fought. So that's just a taste, just a sampling of some of the interviews and topics we covered during the Confederate History Month series of 2007. Go to thepoliticalcesspool.org if our teasers, and by comparison, they're teasers what we've been able to do this month. If they've piqued your interest, go to 2007, go to April, and just immerse yourself in Confederate history, because it is our honor to be the only mainstream AM/FM talk radio show in the country that dedicates a portion of each live broadcast in April to the celebration and preservation of Confederate history and heritage. An honor, Keith.
Yes, and I'd like to answer our correspondent from Croatia, Dane, who wrote in and wanted to know about resources that he could look to that would give him information not just about the military or ideological history of the South, but about the South in a more general sense. Well, the best thing I can refer him to is Michael Andrew Grissom's book, Southern by the Grace of God. This is almost a 600-page volume, and it is, you know, it tells you about Southern cuisine, Southern religious habits, Southern social habits, how Southerners comport themselves differently from other people. And this is why the South riles up the progressives, quote-unquote, or the liberals of the world to the extent that it does. We are resistant to change. We have it down pat, at least in our own minds, and we're very resistant to change. Now, unfortunately, there has been some change over the past 50 or 60 years. You see more and more race traitors among Southerners than you ever used to, but still, the predominant zeitgeist of the South is really explained in exhaustive detail in this book. And you can get it, you can just type in Southern by the Grace of God, Michael Andrew Grissom in your Google box or whatever your search engine is, and you can probably order a copy directly from the author. And you certainly can get it through Amazon and other groups like that. So get that, Dane. Anyone that is really interested in plumbing the depths of what it's like to be Southern and how the South is a distinct region of the United States can do no better than to look at this book, Southern by the Grace of God by Michael Andrew Grissom.
That being said, Keith, we have some more information to share and cover this evening as we conclude our official Confederate History Month 2013 series. But again, I was encouraged this week. We've been talking about it a lot, this program, about all the mail that has come in. We just read a handful of them, folks. Lots more that we just don't have the time to get to because we do like to spend so much time on it. A lot of people seem to be encouraged and intellectually stimulated by our presentations and coverage, Keith, of this unique topic, unique to commercial talk radio in this day and age. And again, folks, I would refer you to the archives of 2007 for more information. Keith, give them an idea, and you went back and referenced the email we received from the listener in Croatia that wanted to know more about Southern culture outside of the war during the years between 1861 and 1865. Again, Keith mentioned it. I'll second it. Echo chamber going on in here. But Southern by the Grace of God is the Bible for you to learn about what Southern culture was and is. It doesn't change for those of us who are truly Southerners in heart, mind, and spirit. Keith, got just a few seconds before the commercial break. Give them an idea of what you're going to be covering over the course of the next hour.
Well, we heard people saying they wanted more good news. Well, we have good news on the front of the Confederate-themed parks in Memphis. And I think we're on the verge of a great victory on this. Hopefully, at least we've got the strategy down and we're fighting back. We're not taking this lying down. And we'll give you all the details about that after these words from our sponsor.
Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign Newspaper. It is time for you to read the most daring underground publication. Spreading the word through print, it seeks to enlighten a free people to be knowledgeable with current, important events and take action in their own communities to stop the New World Order agenda of one world government. This publication is so rogue and extremely daring that establishment sources and critics rarely give approval of its content. Featured articles by concerned citizens, prominent whistleblowers, and credible authors. The Sovereign Newspaper is a monthly 32-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about current events in the age of Obama. The Sovereign Newspaper, available now at newsstands everywhere.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Are you looking for an affordable way to earn your bachelor's degree? Do you want a college experience that's more personal? Then discover your future at America's Transfer College. Students across the U.S. are choosing Ivy Bridge College as a better, smarter way to earn their degree. Thanks to Ivy Bridge's unique program, starting at a two-year college and transferring to finish your degree has never been easier. The program is simple. Start with Ivy Bridge College and take your first 2 years of college online. Transfer to one of over 140 of Ivy Bridge's partner schools and take your upper division courses. Then graduate with your bachelor's degree from the school of your choice. Personal attention, small class sizes, affordable tuition, and a clear pathway to graduation. Start your academic journey and contact us to learn more about Ivy Bridge College today. Call 877-622-2059 or visit americastransfercollege.com to find out more.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
All right, folks, right there, you're hearing new production, on-air production. You're going to have a new website on Wednesday, and then we're going to get back on the speaking circuit and start taking some interview requests. Don't get me wrong. A part of me loves turning down the local affiliates when they come asking for an interview. You know, if you wanted, when we were first starting the show, you couldn't beg these guys to give you publicity. But after you became a name, you know, they wanted to have you on because they wanted to bash you. And they wanted to, you know, they wanted a ticket to the sideshow. They wanted to talk about you. You know, we attained a certain level of success and then they came to us. So, it gives me a little bit of a guilty pleasure to, for the last several years, to have always shot down the local ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox affiliates here in Memphis. I don't mind doing the national stuff, but the local, if you watch the local news here in Memphis, Keith, I mean, everybody has their local news. I couldn't imagine anyone anywhere having a more amateurish presentation than what the local affiliates give you here in Memphis. And we're tying that into Confederate History Month because as I was going on vacation this week and as so many things were happening behind the scenes here for us at TPC, Keith was holding down the fort. Eddie, the Bombardier Miller up in Nashville, just completed a marathon. You were here and you said you got some news hot off the press that's happened since our last show that ties into our Confederate History Month series tonight. What is it, Keith?
Well, here's an article from our ultra-left, as opposed to our just regular leftist newspaper. We have a leftist daily newspaper, the Commercial Appeal, that's affectionately known to Memphians as the Communist Appeal. Unfortunately, because of the consolidation of the newspaper industry back in the 60s and 70s, we now basically have the same editorial policy down here in the heart of Dixie that you would have in Portland, Oregon, okay? You've got the same type of people writing the news, the same type of expression of news, not only in the print media, but on television and radio too, mainstream, but in our ultra-leftist weekly newspaper, and most cities have them nowadays, there is an article in the City Beat regular column by a writer named John Branston that says, Forrest, that's General Forrest, F-O-R-R-E-S-T, rides again. A poll on renaming three parts attracts surprise Civil War buffs. And here's what it says. Well, the fans of Jefferson Davis and Nathan Bedford Forrest have had their fun with park names. What now? If we didn't already know, social media and civics don't mix well. The online name, the Parks Popularity Contest, was no contest. Either hundreds of Forrest Davis fans voted to restore the original names to the handful of Confederate parks. Handful of hardcore from the Sons of Confederate Veterans voted multiple times. That's what his idea is. And basically, here's what he said about what happened. The committee appointed to rename the parks met Monday for 45 minutes, but made no decisions. Members got handouts with the results of the web poll as well as a list of suggestions from the Greater Memphis Chamber of Commerce. The former Nathan Bedford Forest Park that triggered this exercise got 525 responses, with 481 of them favoring the name Forest Park. Ida B. Wells, who was a chronic malcontent black female who led an anti-lynching campaign in Memphis and was run out of town and eventually was one of the founders of the NAACP in the early 20th century, endorsed in some well-publicized newspaper columns, public statements, and blogs, was second with 3 votes.
Okay. I got to say one thing about this. Okay, so Ian, we saw this before. Now, this time, the city council just arbitrarily took down the names of the parks. They didn't have a vote. They didn't have a public forum. They just did it. Now, back in 2005, when the political cesspool, when they pretended to at least want to hear what the public had to say, and the political cesspool successfully led the charge in defense of the 3 Confederate parks here in Memphis, which staved off the their change for at least 8 years, and with the current change pending, we saw this. I remember a poll commissioned by the local, I was still doing local news interviews back then, and I was on the NBC affiliate here, Channel 5. A poll commissioned by Channel 5, one in which you could not vote multiple times. You know, it recorded your IP address, you voted once, you were done. It had a question. It was just simply, do you favor the changing of the names of Nathan Bedford Forest Park? 90%, 9 out of 10 said, no, we want to keep the parks as they are. 10% of the city respondents said yes. So 90 to 10 in a poll commissioned by NBC Memphis, and that was back in 2005. So we're seeing it again here, and this newspaper columnist's opinion is that the only way it could be true is if people are voting over and over and over for the parks. Well, if that's true, couldn't the malcontents vote repeatedly as well? But the fact of the matter is, it's not that. That's not what's going on. What was true in 2005 is true now. The people who actually vote in the city of Memphis, the people who actually read the newspapers and take the time to go and respond to polls, white people, want the parks to stay the same by an over 90% clip, even in today's politically correct climate.
Okay, going back to the article now, it says the former Jefferson Davis Park also got 525 responses, including 484 in favor of that name. In other words, keeping it Jefferson Davis Park. With Confederate Memorial Park, the runner-up with 7 votes. Now, and it also had similar results for renaming Confederate Park. What this shows is that we are indeed ruled by a hostile elite. The race traitors aren't nearly as numerous as we've been led to believe. There are people throughout Memphis that vote the way that we see things. In fact, it reminds me of that referendum that they had in the state of Mississippi back in the about 2001 or 2002 about taking the Confederate battle flag emblem off of the state flag of Mississippi. When all the dust had settled, over 65% of the people in Mississippi voted to keep the flag exactly the way it was, and in fact, by a slim majority, even the black population of Mississippi wanted to keep the Confederate flag on the state flag. Now, the left doesn't like that. The left is trying to move beyond this. They want to say, you know, it's no longer appropriate to reverence the Confederacy and Confederate heroes in a public way in the 21st century, and we're turning the page of forget about it, it's done, it's over with. But That's not, like they say in the musical Porgy and Bess, it ain't necessarily so. Here's what's happening. On April the 1st, April Fool's Day, the Tennessee legislature passed a law that said you could not rename any park, any monument, any public place named after a military figure. Okay? Now, we still have the names of these parks in flux, and they are in the process of hiring a notable counsel, a counsel that had been successful in beating back the left in Nashville that were trying to rename Confederate Hall, which had been contributed the money for building that particular building on campus on the at Vanderbilt University. The money had been contributed by the local branch of the United Daughters of the Confederacy. They succeeded in beating that back, and we're hopeful that we're going to be able to beat this back as well. What this shows, more than anything else, is reflected in an article that appeared recently in Western Voices World News called The Egalitarian Oversight. What happens when non-white people begin to predominate and flex their political muscle? We're seeing it here in Memphis, and we'll give you all the gory details after these words from our sponsor.
Across the land, you're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Traveler's Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
Hello, everyone. James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
All right. Somewhat related to Confederate history, we're talking about the battle that continues into the present day, the battle to eradicate all symbols of our culture and our heroes. It's a battle that we find ourselves firmly engaged. And Keith, I'm going to get back to you about the current news, then we're going to wrap up this hour. Before we go to the third and final, which will feature Winston Smith and his special guest, and we'll look forward to seeing what Winston has in store for us during the third hour. But Keith, let's wrap up Confederate History Month in style here.
Okay, I just want to use the particular item that's before us now, the effort to rename the Confederate parks in Memphis and eliminating any reference to the Confederacy or any Confederate, to the broader context of demographic change. What this shows is that what's good for the goose is not good for the gander. Can you imagine, you know, what, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, the Bible or Jesus encouraged us to say. And let's just look at it through that lens. Can you imagine what would happen if the Memphis City Council was proposing to change the name of Martin Luther King Boulevard in Memphis, or the Martin Luther King Expressway, or any other public space that had been named after some black civil rights person? Well, you would hear a din that would be, you know, the whole world would know about this. Federal troops would probably move into Memphis and enforce political correctness on the recalcitrant population. But on the other hand, when the shoe's on the other foot and the left is trying to erase, do some, you know, Orwellian rewriting of history by denying traditional whites the right to honor their heroes in the naming of a park or a street or something like this, well, that's all wonderful. Now, it shows you that what we've said on this program before is absolutely true. When whites become a minority in any locale, minority rights almost immediately become a thing of the past. We have no rights that blacks are bound to respect according to the leftist paradigm. Vilfredo Pareto, the Italian philosopher from the 19th century, made a very cogent comment about this, and he was absolutely on the money. He said, "When I am weak, I ask you for equality and justice because those are your principles." In other words, the white power structure's principles back in the 50s or the 60s, for example. "But when I am strong, like the black elites are in Memphis now, I deny equality and justice to you because those are my principles." Blacks and other non-whites are not committed to egalitarian principles. And this is a big mistake that most liberal whites make. They assume that they're going to have some protections written into the law, just like the protections that we so assiduously observe in regard to blacks. For example, no person would dream of trying to rename Martin Luther King Boulevard because you would suffer the wrath of Khan, for one thing. That's a practical thing. And secondly, we're sensitive to the perceptions of other people. Non-whites, forget about it, as they would say on The Sopranos. They're not about to give any concession. They're going to be large and in charge. And in fact, that's what this whole Confederate Parks controversy in Memphis is about, showing the people of Memphis and the nation that blacks are large and in charge in the city of Memphis. Now, what's going to happen? You're going to see a constant erosion of opportunities for white people. While whites are in charge, like Winston Smith has said many times before, At any moment of any day or night, there is a group of white people somewhere in the world wringing their hands, racking their brains, trying to think of some way that they can make life easier or more prosperous or better for non-white people. At the same time, you can say that at any moment of any day or night in the world, there is no group of non-whites doing the same thing in regard to white people. This altruism, this egalitarian impulse, seems to be exclusively the domain of white people. And white people had better wake up and smell the coffee, because we're heading towards a demographic disaster. And believe me, when the non-whites are in control, we already have a preview, a sneak peek of what's going to happen. It's called Zimbabwe and the current South Africa. In fact, there's an article that I brought along to the show tonight. We may not have time to get into it in depth, but it was in the April 14th edition of the Commercial Appeal, the Sunday edition, and it's on page 8A, and it says, South Africa looks at itself since apartheid, and even people like Nelson Mandela and Desmond Tutu have to admit that the current version of South Africa is much inferior to the prosperous nation that existed when whites were in charge and apartheid was the rule. Now, they're puzzled, excuse me, about why that is. We here at the Cesspool have no puzzlement about this whatsoever, and I don't think our audience does either. Just like things go better with Coke, things work better when white people are in charge, because quite frankly, we're the only people that can be trusted to be fair with everybody and to play fair. We're the people that basically gave up our position of authority and power under legalized segregation because we were beguiled by the idea that there would be no favoritism, that we would have people and opportunities parsed out, not according to the color of our skin, but according to the content of our character. This, of course, qualifies as the fourth great lie. I told you about the other three earlier in the show. This is the fourth one. Once non-whites have the political power, they're going to shove a boot on your neck, and they're going to make you submit. And you're going to be like the poor Boers in South Africa living in a shanty town, begging for crumbs, denied jobs, denied opportunities, despite the fact that you are eminently more qualified than the black people or the other non-white people that hold those jobs. This is what we have to look at. It's not going to be an egalitarian wonderland, and there are going to be some very surprised liberals sometime in the future, around 2042, when the excrement hits the fan, James.
Well, Keith, I appreciate that commentary. And now it's time to bring it back full circle and tie it together with the culmination of this year's Confederate History Month series. When we come back from the final commercial break of this hour, I'm going to share with you a letter that was written in between the end of the war and present day to show you just how much we've changed just in the last few decades with regards to how we view and respect the Southern heroes. Where do you think it goes going forward? Certainly popular support, public opinion is still with us on this issue. Of course, that doesn't matter. 90% of the city can feel one thing, and the government and the media is going to report it in one way and take actions to the contrary of the wishes of the majority. Nothing new there. Even in Mississippi, I think when they voted on the flag, a majority of blacks even voted to keep the Confederate emblem on the flag, the state flag of Mississippi. So where do you see this going forward, Keith, as political correctness continues to take hold? Does it continue to take hold in American culture? Will voices like the political cesspool get to a point and grow to have such a reach where we can begin to turn the rudder on this thing? How's it go down?
Well, as the straw poll that was run by the committee on renaming the parks in Memphis showed, the liberal viewpoint is not very popular, and that is the surprising reality, because you would think from all the chatter that you get from the chattering classes, the journalists, the people in higher academia, our hostile elite, that everybody thinks like them. Instead, it's just the opposite. Whenever people are given the chance to voice an opinion, they come down on the conservative side of things more often than not. Now, why have we been so successfully cordoned off from having a voice in the public square? Why are 8 movie studios run by non-whites, one specific group? They're controlling everything. It's Jewish power and influence, people, and we'll get into more detail about that after these words from our sponsor.
Let's hang on and come back to the political cesspool right after these messages here on the Liberty News Radio Network.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads. A divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is, again, the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Hello everyone, James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
If you're at all like me, you have a tough time remembering appointments and events. But ladies and gentlemen, I have the answer. It's a premier service on the internet called Memo to Me. It's free. You ought to try it. Now I never miss the honey-do items from my wife or the important business meetings. They have strict privacy protection. That means they will release your email address to no one ever. You will not get spam because of Memo to Me. Unmatched dependability. Ladies and gentlemen, these folks have been around since 1998, and they are absolutely up online all the time to send you your reminders and appointments. They have rock-solid reliability. They have 5 redundant internet connections, diesel-powered generators backing up the system. I'm telling you, Memo to Me is the premier reminder service on the internet. It's free. You ought to give it a try. And, oh, by the way, if you're not available at your computer to get your email reminders, they can even send a reminder to your cell phone or pager. I use MemoToMe.com daily and highly recommend it to you. MemoToMe.com. Memo to Me.
Get on the show. Call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
As Keith noted on the bounce back from that commercial break, I did have a hand in the production of the spots there that are put together for us. Let's hang on. All right, Keith, we've spent the last couple of segments here in this last week of Confederate History Month talking about some contemporary assaults on our heroes and our cultural heritage. Didn't always used to be that way, and I'm not talking about just in the days, the war years. Even for many decades after that, there was a healthy and natural sense of respect and admiration and reverence for the Confederacy, for the soldiers, and as well it should be today. And we post this letter every year. It was actually sent to me by a listener of the Political Cesspool radio program in Florida. It was a letter that was written by the comptroller of the state of Florida to his great-grandmother. And she was the widow of a Confederate veteran. So here's what we've got here. Bit of real-life history. Once again, it's a letter from the comptroller of the state of Florida that accompanied the Confederate veteran's pension check after he passed away to his widow, who just happened to be the great-grandmother of a listener of TPC. It was written December 20th, 1933. She was a widow by then. Listen to the language praising the ideals of the lost cause. It's words that would never pass the lips of a politician today, that's to say the least. But the difference in attitudes of public officials between now and then is just staggering. I mean, we talk all the time about 1954, Brown versus Board of Education, that anniversary, that ominous black day in American history comes up again in May. We'll talk about that. Certainly a lot's happened since 1954. You go a little bit before that, and you still had letters being written such as this. And listen, folks, not only to what it reads, but the grammar and the usage of vocabulary employed here. I'm not just talking about we've fallen a long way from the days where state elected officials praised Confederate ideals. We've fallen so far from the standard of education, just all across the board. Listen to this letter. College professors couldn't write this well, and this was just a quick scribble note written that accompanied a pension check written by a bureaucrat at the time. Here's what it says. It's dated December 20th, 1933, State of Florida, Comptroller's Office, Tallahassee. Dear Mrs. Sarah McGehee, dear friend, I consider it quite fortunate on my part in being selected as the official charged with the responsibility of mailing you the enclosed pension check. It is a rare privilege and a pleasure to forward to you this token of appreciation of the great state of Florida. I wish you and yours a very Merry Christmas and a surprisingly Happy New Year. Personally, I feel the debt of gratitude owing you by the Commonwealth of this state cannot be estimated in material wealth and therefore cannot be composed by mere payment of money. It is a liability that cannot be expressed in dollars, but it can be enshrined in the sacred archives of tradition, and by teaching the succeeding generations that by your actions, experience, and devotion to a sacred principle, you have proved that God does not force us into deep water to drown us, but to cleanse us, and that adversity is the trial of principle without which one hardly knows whether or not he is honest, unless, like those who fought for the Confederacy, he is sorely tried, smelted, and polished, and glorified in the furnace of our tribulation. If we remain true to our ideals and steadfast to our principles, as exemplified by those who followed the Stars and Bars, we are reminded that honor is likened to certain herbs and flowers. They send forth their most delightful odors only after they have been crushed and broken. Therefore, we should, all of us, profit from the experience and example of you brave souls who have conquered discouragement and despair and have, phoenix-like, risen from the dead ashes of destitution and want to the heights of honor, peace, and tranquility. May that one, in whose honor we observe Christmas, comfort and keep you. Very sincerely, J.M. Lee, Comptroller. And I want to thank TPC listener Stephen McGehee for bringing the stirring letter to our attention. Keith, he praises the Confederacy, writes so beautifully, so eloquently, talks about Christ and how the faith in him being so important. And this came from a government official. Who would be holding that position now? Who now populates the halls? You go to the Shelby County DMV, the Shelby County election commission. You go to the penal farm where they have all the offices. Not people like this. Not people like Mr. Lee, the comptroller of Florida, who wrote this. That's one of the most beautiful things I've ever read. And I'm telling you, that's the truth. And we read it every year on Confederate History Month. And that's how everyone used to feel all the way up till, I mean, still certainly we were reading that poll. A lot of people still feel that way. But they expressed it just like that not too many years ago.
You've got to remember, this is just a public official dashing off a quick note to accompany a check. You know, we have this slanderous attitude nowadays that a person is educated only if they have a liberal viewpoint. Now, back in my day, they were sending some white Gentiles to places like Harvard and Yale, but that was to turn them into change agents, transform them into liberals, and send them back. Consequently, that's why everybody from Harvard, Yale, and these other heights of academia today are almost uniformly liberal. And also, they are predominantly Jewish. Jews make up 1.7% of the population of the United States, but over one-third of the student population of schools like Harvard and Yale. That is the secret to untying the Gordian knot. How does this hostile elite manage to control public opinion? They do it because they control the media. And the people that control the media are predominantly Jewish. Now, what's wrong with Jewish people? We, you know, there are certain people, even people that think a lot like us, like Jared Taylor, that don't want to face up to this. But Jews are the wealthiest subset of the American population. They are the smartest. Ashkenazi Jews have the highest median IQ of any group. And they have a zeal for politics, and they are predominantly liberal. 4 out of 5, typically, in any presidential election, vote for the Democratic candidate for president. And of the 20% that don't, almost half of those people vote for people even further to the left than the Democratic candidate. For example, a Ralph Nader or the American Communist Party candidate. What that shows you is that they are the secret ingredient responsible for the triumph of liberalism in America and in the world over the past 60 or so years. You know, we had a local so-called civil rights icon, this black woman named Maxine Smith, who was the leader of the local chapter of the NAACP. And to listen to the news reports, you would think that this woman accomplished all of this change by her lonesome, you know, all by herself. The reality is that without Jewish money, Jewish organizational skill, Jewish intelligence, and Jewish zeal, none of these radical egalitarian projects like the civil rights movement, radical feminism, environmentalism, homosexual rights, criminal rights, illegal alien rights, name it, yada, 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 as they say on Seinfeld, none of this stuff would have amounted to a hill of beans. Now, a little glimpse into this has been provided recently in Memphis by the revelation that Ernest Withers, who was a photographer, supposedly the Matthew Brady of the civil rights movement, he was the one chronicling and making all these iconic photographs like the one that everybody has seen with the Memphis garbage workers, with the I am a man placards, you know, like sandwich boards on both sides of them marching. He was a paid FBI informant, paid to rat out other blacks and other leaders in the civil rights movement. Quite frankly, all of these people, Martin Luther King is a perfect example. If he had not been getting paid by the Soviet communists and the Jewish communists in America to conduct himself as he did and to be the de facto leader of the civil rights movement, he would have given up the civil rights movement and gone back to what black preachers typically do, which is preying upon their congregations for money and for sex. That's what happened, except for the fact that this infusion of money kept things going. And the money always tracks back, all the footprints always track back to the Jewish camp. Now, you have to understand that in order to understand the triumph of liberalism. This is the secret ingredient. This is the yeast that makes the dough rise in every liberal movement that has gone by the boards in the passing parade of human affairs over the past 60, 70, even longer than that. This is what happens. If you'll notice, there was not a lot of liberalism in America until the second wave of immigration occurred between 1890 and 1920. And that liberalism was brought here, and it coincided with the fact that for the first time we had a large number of Jewish immigrants come to America. Before then, there weren't very many. Now, the Civil War, as we pointed out throughout this month, was not fought and not understood by the people fighting it, either on the North or the South, to be a crusade to end slavery. And that just falls right in line with all this. James, I'm going to turn it back to you for some closing comments.
The only thing I have time to say is stay tuned, folks. Third and final hour forthcoming. Still got a couple of days in April, even though this will be our last show during the month of April. So get to thepoliticalcesspool.org for more Confederate History Month coverage. Winston Smith waiting in the wings with his special guest, which we'll present to you right after these words.